The playwright Lydia Diamond doesn't shy away from difficult conversations about race in America. In 2010, her racially charged family drama called Stickfly premiered at Boston's Huntington Theater Company before going on to Broadway. Now she's back with a new play called Smart People, also premiering at the Huntington. Smart People is set in and around Harvard, just as America is about to elect Barack Obama president. It follows four characters: a black surgeon, a black actress, an Asian American psychologist, and a white neuropsychiatrist named Brian White, whose research suggests that we are biologically predisposed to be racist. It's a controversial theory that makes just about everybody a little jumpy for different reasons. So here's Brian White, played by Roderick Hill, in a pivotal scene in which he explains how white liberals trick themselves into thinking they're not racist.
If I'm the white liberal, I don't hate you. I sort of pity you, but I don't really hate you. I just don't really want you to live in my neighborhood. In fact, I want to move into yours and make you move out so I can build a Trader Joe's. I'm not racist, really. Only a handful of the best of your kids could go to my kids' schools. Oh, I'm not racist, really. I don't know that everybody at my job is white. In fact, I'm so not racist that I've been virulently critiquing that for years. I'm not racist. Just please don't my daughter.
Smart People is on stage at the Huntington through the end of June, and playwright Lydia Diamond is with us now. And welcome to the program, and congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I had such a good time at this play last week, and I want to start by asking you, tell me how the idea for this play was born. Did you sit down to write a play about race and how difficult it is to talk about?
You know, sort of. So my husband found an article that a woman named Susan Fiske had written. She's a neuropsychiatrist at Princeton. And it was an article called Dehumanizing the Lowest of the Low that was all about brain imaging and how we see other. It wasn't the premise that my play has, but it sparked an idea. And then I kind of decided I wanted to own this notion of writing a play about race. All of my work, I say, focuses on race and gender and sexuality. But I'd never said I'm writing a play that's specifically about race.
So, and why is that?
I think partly and probably subconsciously because it makes us uncomfortable. And I think it's a much more productive conversation to have if people know that you're not writing something with an agenda. And I don't. I write plays about contemporary people or historical figures who inhabit rooms that are like rooms I inhabit. So sometimes they are upper middle class, and sometimes they're middle class, and sometimes they're working class. But the conversation of race and class, I think, often is more productive if it's a part of a conversation about family. So this is the first time I've really owned that, and it feels liberating.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk to you about all the characters, but let me start with the protagonist, Brian White. You told us where this idea came from, but he's developing this theory that we're biologically predetermined to be racist. And this is a really controversial idea in the play. It gets him in all kinds of trouble with his colleagues, pretty much threatens to derail his career. But can you talk about how different people in the play respond to this research in different ways? Because everyone seems to have a different response to it.
Oh, it's a tricky question to ask without doing a spoiler alert. But I would say that the play is looking at the underpinnings of racism and the fabric of the way race works in our society. But first, it's looking at these relationships. And these are four very interesting, high-achieving people who are in academia or the arts and kind of how they bump against one another. I think that because Jenny and Jackson and Valerie and Brian are people who are of different races and classes in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. The way the themes and the way the work that Brian does happens has radically different implications for each one of them. And it's very personal, but what's exciting about it for me is that it's not conscious. It just sort of lives there in the ether around them.
Yeah. You mentioned Jackson Moore. So he's the black surgeon played by McKinley Belcher III. And I want to introduce him because this play doesn't just delve into sort of white-black racial tensions. There's a number of complicated arguments around race within races. And so here's another scene that I want to play. And this is with McKinley Belcher III, who plays the black surgeon, arguing with Valerie Johnston, a struggling black actress, part-time housekeeper, played by Miranda Craigwell.
You don't think the house cleaning thing sets us back a little? I mean, my grandma and mom cleaned houses so I could go to medical school and make something of the family.
Not to help people?
Say what?
You went to medical school to help people, yes?
And your deaf portrayal of Portia empowers our people how?
I volunteer for Obama.
I take bullets out of gangbangers.
What's wrong with you?
I just never met someone so incredibly well insulated. You volunteer for Obama is your whole black card?
You didn't ask me for my black card.
You didn't tell me you spread your legs prematurely because I'm a doctor.
So, thank you for dinner.
I thought that was a great scene.
But I like that one, too.
It really sheds light on this idea, though, that racial tensions don't go away when you're interacting with someone of the same race, right?
No, not at all. They're just so a part of who we are because of the social circumstances in which we've had to be raised. Mm. And for Valerie and Jackson, it is as much class, if not more, as race. You know, she's a young woman who's an actor, a very talented one, who has come from a family of great privilege, who's managed to put her through both undergraduate and graduate school, and works as a maid just to sort of be irreverent. And then Jackson, who has kind of come up from a relatively meager existence and made very good for himself in the world. And the assumptions and things about each other that they take for granted are kind of the spark that fuels this sometimes relationship, sometimes feud.
Hmm. Tell me about your choice of the time in which this play is set. There are all these difficult conversations about race and racism just at the dawn of the age of Obama.
I started writing the play before Obama was elected president. And as I said before, I knew that I was writing a play about race, but it forced me really to up my game around how the conversation of race happened. All of a sudden, we were talking about post-racial, and there was this kind of self-congratulatory feel in the air that I thought was a little dangerous and a little inaccurate. Hmm. So what happened is that in the creation of this play, the whole paradigm shifted, and I thought I had my speaking points pretty down. Hmm. I kind of knew that I knew how to talk about it. And then Obama got elected, and with this kind of self-congratulatory thing, there started to be this shifting that suggested that maybe this race thing that we had for so long been saying is deeply problematic had sort of dissipated. And the play needed to address that, and again, in a way that wasn't didactic and wasn't accusatory, just kind of was saying it in a sophisticated way that deserved to be on stage.
Well, I think you did it really well, and I like it when you say there isn't an agenda here, because what I took away was there was so much really smart conversation about a really difficult subject. But at the end of the day, I walked away just sort of thinking, man, this is complicated stuff. I mean, we've made some progress in this country on race, and that's a good thing, but it's still so complicated.
Absolutely. It's the most difficult thing to talk about, it and I think class. It makes us so uncomfortable. It makes us feel implicated. It makes us feel it's hurtful if we've sort of grown up being somebody who's kind of under the dynamic. It's embarrassing, and it's something we've been bumping our heads against forever. So, yes, it's a conversation that demands that we sort of listen and digest.
Hmm. I want to ask you about the setting. As we mentioned, Smart People is set in the world of Cambridge and Harvard. You lived here. You taught at BU for some time. Your husband was working at Harvard. So you lived in this world of smart people. Did that inspire this play? I mean, did you see these smart people that are very much of this world in greater Boston struggling with these conversations?
Well, I had been lucky enough to know smart people all over the country.
You mean we're not the only
group of smart people?
Sadly,
you're not, but I'll let you think that.
I think you've just disabused me of that
idea. I hope so. And yes, indeed, I wrote it here, you know, in a coffee shop at Darwin's and at Starbucks. And I needed to have this group of high-achieving people who were set in a sort of uncontested atmosphere of intellectual legitimacy and ambition.
Mm-hmm.
The play is so much about also where our ambition and our drive meets our altruism or our sincere desires to make good in the world and make good for ourselves and define our own goals. And through all of that, find love and relationships.
Well, Lydia Diamond, thank you so much for coming in. It was great to meet you and great to see smart people. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me and for seeing the show.
And the Huntington Theater Company's world premiere of Smart People is on stage at the Calderwood Pavilion through the end of the month. There's a lot more information at radioboston.org.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.